Okay, so I went to Honduras a couple weeks ago, and I want to start off by saying thank you to everyone who prayed for me and contributed money. I've said before, I got all the money that I needed and all the money that I wanted to spend. It was amazing how much money came in through the school and you guys and the community. It was just, you could tell it was God's will for me to go because he just blessed me so much. And I could just feel everybody's prayers. You know, right before I went, I was like, I am so nervous. I'm not going to be able to do this. And then as soon as we got to the airport, I was like, you know what? This is what I'm supposed to do. And I was fine. I wasn't nervous at all. And the whole week, I felt such a peace that this was what God wanted me to do and that he was going to take care of me. And it was so evident, you know, there were so many snowstorms, but none of our flights were delayed. And everybody else at the airport is running around, you know, all the strangers are all running around. Oh, my flight's delayed 12 hours, whatever. Ours was right on time, and we were safe. And, you know, the area that we were at was kind of dangerous. The week before we came, there was a shooting at the gate. The people get a little upset because everybody down there is animist or Catholic. And so when they hear, you know, Protestant, they're like, oh, not cool. So they kind of get a little bit violent just because they're not sure what's going on. And the week before we came, there was a shooting, but nobody got hurt in it. And while we were there, everything was very peaceful, and God just took care of us. And I asked a lot of people to pray for my health, and I was healthy. My allergies were bad, but there was a nurse, and I got medicine, and everybody was happy, including me. And I had a fantastic time. I grew a lot, and I was so close to God the whole time. I still am, but it was just amazing. And the team worked out perfectly. None of us knew each other. We were all from different areas. Well, some of them were from, like, Knox area. There were two people from Akron, and then my uncle knew just about everybody. He was from Kutztown. Yeah, my uncle's from Kutztown. And of course, I'm from here. So, you know, we had a very wide variety, but God just picked the people so perfectly, and everybody had a role to play, and everybody was a major contribution. So it was really cool. And I didn't have too much work to make up because the snowstorm moved the PSSA, and so all I had to do was come and write a whole bunch of papers and be like, oh, done. So it worked out perfectly. I have some pictures to show you. I'm going to pretty much walk you through my week. We worked almost every day, so all those pictures are in a clump. You'll just get to see a whole bunch of work. When we got there, the road conditions were amazing. We landed in the second most dangerous airport in the world, and they told us that after we landed. It was very comforting. So we landed and they were like, oh, we just put lines on our highway and we're all really excited. But the lines didn't mean anything. You'll see later on, I have a picture of the cars are just like passing right over the double yellow lines and they didn't mean a thing. Then they're like, oh, and our road is halfway paved. We just got it paved about 6 years ago. Well, there were potholes like 6 inches deep. And they're going like 65 up this road, and they're just like swerving around all the potholes. I'm like, do you know that you're on a dirt road with huge potholes? Like, are you aware of that? But we got up there, and this is the gate leading. If I turn like this, does my mic still pick me up? Okay, cool. This is the gate leading into the ranch, and this is the guard. Look, he has a gun. And so we felt very protected. They got to wear uniforms, and they had a gun, and they had you had to sign in and out every time you left. They had dogs there, kind of for protection, but more just for company. This dog has been shot. He's had, like, leprosy. Not leprosy. He had some kind of weird skin disease. He's the immortal dog. He's still alive and kicking. At the ranch, they pick coffee. They call it a ranch. It's really an orphanage. Not in the orphanage sense that we have, like, you go there and adopt a child. The orphanage kind of adopts children from the community. Like, people who cannot raise their own children bring them, and then the children just live there, and there's no way for you to adopt out of the orphanage. But they grow crops. They grow coffee and bananas and corn and blackberries. And this is the coffee. When we came, there were like two rows, maybe three. This is about halfway through the week, and this is after an entire week, and they hire coffee pickers from the town because they pick enough in a day that is equal to how much the children could pick in like a month. So they call them coffee strippers. They just go and like strip all the bushes. This is the place where we stayed. They actually have a guest house because they have teams down there like almost every week, and so they have to have some place to put them. This is one of the houses. The children are divided into families of about eight, and then they have house parents, and their house parents vary from year to year because you have to be a kind of special person to want to live your whole life down there, I guess. And you can tell the orphanage is pretty nice. They have, it's pretty much upper class living or middle class living compared to the way the other people live. This is one of the houses. They have running water and all the regular appliances like freezers and refrigerators and dishwashers and clothes washers and all that great stuff. This is the windows of our guest house, but every building was this way. You put bars on all the windows because it's too dangerous to leave them just glass. This is eggs. They're on the counter. You don't need to refrigerate eggs. That's just a North American thing. So before they're cooked, you just leave them in a basket out on the counter, and nothing's wrong with them. I'm living proof of that. I haven't died yet. This is the dining room. You can tell it's really nice. They had huge wood furniture. Look, that's our bathroom. This is one of the, they had three bunk beds per room. My roommates were really messy. I just couldn't believe it. I'm not a messy person, so I took a picture of it. This is coffee bushes. I have a lot of pictures of this because it's just interesting. You don't think of coffee growing this way. You can tell behind the corn is more coffee bushes. There's a coffee bush. They grow, they look like cherries. And then you kind of like peel them apart, you peel the red stuff off, and you're left with like these little slimy snail-like beans. It's kind of gross. Then you bake them like three times and they turn into real coffee beans. Flowers like this just kind of grow everywhere. And it's kind of weird because you'll be driving through the city and you see like these little shacks of houses, and right beside it's this huge flowering bush. And you're like, wow. Okay. This, you can't really tell. The sky was so amazingly blue down there. And the weather was so unpredictable. I was telling Chuck Kim, actually, that like around here you can kind of tell, oh, it's going to rain in 2 hours judging by the clouds. But down there you'd be like, oh, it's going to rain in 2 hours. And about 2 minutes later it'd be pouring. The clouds just like move so quick across the sky. That's more coffee bushes. There's bananas. They grow bananas. They grow pretty weird, and then they pick them and they wait for them to get yellow. There you go. There's a banana tree. This is looking over the grounds. You can see the blackberry bushes, and they grow like squash type stuff. This is all just nature pictures. This is kind of back behind the up on the hillside. This is the fruit off the top of a banana tree. The only country that eats that is Costa Rica, and they like cut it up and fry it. Nobody else does it. This is looking down over the ranch. You can see most of the houses. There's some over here too, though. Here's the coffee pickers. See, that's what they've picked in like a day. And then they'll load it onto this big pickup truck and it'll get put down in the storehouse, which is actually the chapel. This is a coffee bush again. There's the coffee beans. They're really slimy. I wanted to bring some home, like the actual red berries, but I wasn't sure if I could make it through customs with them. So I just didn't. This is the building that we worked on. The building on the left is the elementary school and kind of a middle school, and most of the high schoolers go down to the city. The building on the right is the building that we're working on, which will be the high school, and it's kind of a mirror image of this building. This is the inside of the finished building. You can tell, like, everything was just this huge wood, beautiful furniture, and we got to meet the guys who make it, and they just like, they make like 17 bunk beds in a day. It was incredible. You can, that's a mural. They have murals everywhere. Everybody likes to paint, and they just paint all over the walls. It's beautiful. They're playing Foursquare. Everybody played, from the adult workers to the little kids. It's a kind of soccer, I guess. You have to have somebody else explain it to you. It's like hacky sack with a soccer ball, if that helps anybody. This is a shirt. It's a quote from a movie, and it was just so weird because you go down there and it's like, why are you wearing a shirt from Napoleon Dynamite? This little boy is the only little boy who doesn't live right on the grounds. He lives down in the city with his parents, who are workers on the ranch, and he was so cute. He ate lunch with us every day. That's Obed. He's been speaking English for now, like, probably 5 weeks. When we got there, it had only been 2 weeks, and he was, like, fluent. It was incredible. This is pictures of the city. You can tell, like, they build into the mountains, and then when they run out of room, they build on top of each other. You'll see later on, I have one that's like apartments. They're just built like 4 stories up, but it's not the same building. Like, they don't look like ours. You can see Pizza Hut and Burger King and Coca-Cola in that picture if you look closely. There you can kind of see how they build on top of their buildings. That's not in the right spot. That was the ranch. Okay, so Sunday, I gotta make sure I covered everything. Okay. Sunday, we got to go down into the city, and we got to go to a church. It's one of the few English-speaking churches in the capital, and it was really boring. Everybody thought so. The entire team were like, "Can we please go to a local church?" That was not cool. but you know, whatever. This is, while we were driving down, we got to see them passing over the yellow lines. It was quite shocking. And they do their political signs right on the rock side, and it was just awesome. This is a pretty old one, but when they first do them, they're like bright primary colors, and they're beautiful. I couldn't get a picture. After church service, we got to take a lot of pictures. That's a mall. Their malls are really amazing because you'll be like driving down the street and you see all these little shacks, and then all of a sudden there's a mall and it's just huge. There's Burger King and Pizza Hut and Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin Robbins, and yeah. There's the sign for the church that we went to. It was actually pretty good, but then in the middle the guy tried to make like this persuasive political speech, and we were all like, what is going on? This is a restaurant that we ate at after the church service. It had a mariachi band in it, but we weren't allowed to make eye contact with it or take any pictures. One person got a picture by like zooming across the restaurant and taking a picture without the guy knowing it. But we weren't allowed to take pictures of them because they mug you. Like, if you don't tip them enough, they'll just like rip you out of your seat and be like, "Give me money," only in Spanish. This is the front of the restaurant. It was very Indian influenced. They gave us so many courses of food. Like, I don't think I've ever eaten so much food in my life. At the end, when they brought up the steak, it was like, we got half portion. It was like this big. I ate like a third of it, maybe. This was the first thing that they brought out. It's like bean dip with, it's a type of sour cream, but it's real mild and kind of more soupy. And then over on the left is this awesome cheese dip thing that they fed us. But you can, there's hot coals in the bottom, and then they put the bowl on top so that it remains warm. And it was really warm because that cheese was like boiling in the middle. It was cool. That's art. They had, their lights were these animals with light bulbs coming out of their eyes. A lot of them were very brightly colored. I didn't really think of it as art, but the guy next to me was into advertising. He was like, "Can't you tell?" I'm like, "No, not at all." This is a hook. You put your purse on it so that the mariachi band doesn't rob you. It goes like between your legs. So that was pretty cool. I told this story to the kids at school, and they thought it was cool, so I'll tell you guys too. There are school buses everywhere as public transportation, because when America's done with them, no matter what condition they're in, we send them down there, and then they fix them up and use them. Well, it used to be no matter what condition they were in. And then, like, 6 years ago, we made a law that said that you can't send the ones that have been bombed down there, because you'll just see, like, this huge pile of metal and leather seating, and the only thing that tells you that it's a bus is that it was once painted yellow. And we asked somebody about them, one of the missionaries, and she was like, oh, yeah, that's a school bus. See, America sends them down, and then the Hondurans can't fix them. So, but it was kind of funny, because you'd be, why are all these kids going to school? But they weren't, it was just public transportation. This is a payphone. Kind of looks like a spaceship or something. This is the bridge house. It's a set of apartments where the kids from the orphanage go after they're finished in high school. And they go to live there. They're taught about, like, having a budget. And you can't get part-time jobs, so when they aren't at school, they get full-time jobs. And they're completely bilingual, the children are, so they can go to whatever college they want and get whatever job they want, because they're just, you know, this is a middle-class home, and they are one of the cream of the crop, I guess, because they can speak both languages and they're very educated. That was a telephone pole. That's not how we do it here. I thought it was kind of cool. Kind of dangerous. And that's a stop sign. Although stop signs in Honduras don't really mean very much. Neither do stop lights. See, what they really mean is honk really loud and look before you go. Other than that, they don't mean a thing. And the berm on the side of the road, that's really like, in case the guy in front of you breaks, you can just kind of go off into that little part and pass him. It's kind of an extra lane. On the way up, we got, on the way back to the ranch, after we had ate and gone to the church and everything, we, this is all on Sunday, we gave our leftovers from the meal to the children along the way. Because as we got up in the mountains, we got more and more rural and harder living, so we gave them all our scraps and stuff in takeout boxes. It was more like leftovers, not scraps, because there was a lot of food. He was fixing the road with a shovel, and you give them the food, and they just drop whatever they're doing and go over the side and eat and eat, and you want to look at them and be like, don't do that, that's not good. It's not healthy. You should not eat that fast. But I'm sure they know what they're doing. You can see, look, he repaired it pretty good. They hang out their laundry just in the middle of everything. And this is a pretty decent house. So you can tell this is like a fourth-story apartment, and it has nothing to do with the building underneath it. And it's like 10 feet by 10 feet, and they said that's a pretty good apartment. I'm like, I don't want to live in a room that small ever. I get so claustrophobic. This is where they wash their clothes, and you can see the, oh no, I'm not going to remember what it's called. The thing you dry your clothes on, the washerboard? Is that what it's called? Washboard, yes, okay. And the people at the orphanage don't use that because they have clothes washers and dryers, but everybody else uses them. Okay. Now, this is all going to be pictures of work. Almost every day, we woke up at some ungodly hour and went to work at like 7. And then we worked until like 6:30. That's been really funny. And we stopped in the middle for lunch, which was always really good, like some kind of bean, and then some kind of tortilla, and some kind of vegetable. You just kind of wrapped it all together, put some rice on top, and ate it. Didn't ask any questions. We found beans in our lasagna. It was crazy. Like, what's a bean doing in the middle of this? Okay. This is my uncle. So I said he's from Kutztown. He was the only person I knew when I went on, when I decided to go on the trip. This is Becky. Her husband was in charge of organizing the trip, and they were pastors of the Grace Church in Knox. Maybe. One of them. This is Bill and his wife Lois. Bill was a mold inspector at a glass plant in Brockway, I think. And Lois was a retired school teacher. There's going to be a picture of her later on. And Bill did all the wiring. Did a very good job. We did not have any telephone poles that looked like that one I showed you earlier. This is Ed. He lives with his wife Valerie and his two children, AJ and Wes. They're the full-time missionaries down there. They're in charge of the ranch. This is Becky's husband, Chris. This is Jeff. He is Ed's brother-in-law or something. He was very good. He knew exactly what to do, and he just kind of went to town. This is looking out the window of the upper story of the building we were working on, the high school. I just thought it was cool because you can see the cement mixer and the piece of machinery. And see that retaining wall, like, back in the corner there? I painted that. Yeah. It was fun. I got really weird sunburns. This is Marlene. She's a geometry teacher. I know, the picture's crooked. My mom's craning her neck. I didn't take this one. I think the girl who took it thought it was artistic. I'm not sure about that one. We did a lot of polyurethaning and sanding and stuff because I told you, like, they dish out bunk beds like nobody else. This is Lois. It's Bill's wife. She's a retired kindergarten teacher. This is Lillian. She's from Akron, Ohio. She'd been there before, a couple years ago. There's also Ashley. I don't have a picture of her right now. And Paul. And I'll point them out when I get to them. This is the upstairs when we first got there of the building. It was basically just the cement. And we ended up painting the walls and doing the ceiling and the hallway. And downstairs we painted the walls and put up all the dividers and the ceiling. I don't have anything to say about these. I do have something funny to say. One of the guys tried to take home a broken piece of equipment or some kind of nail gun in his luggage, and he got in a lot of trouble. They're like, "What is this?" He's like, "It's a broken nail gun." They're like, "We don't believe you." It's like, "It is. It's a broken nail gun." There's a cement mixer. All the cement that you just saw that was used to pour the floors and stuff was used with that, or was poured with that, or mixed with that, or something. Some verb. We got to put the gutters up around the outside, and they said that they stack up the scaffolding as far as it'll go, and then they put benches on it and chairs on top of that. And this one time they took a bench and they put it out the window, and one guy held onto the end that was inside, and the other guy stood on the other end. We didn't get to experience that. That's me. I'm painting. This is my Uncle John. I just thought it looked pretty cool. They're putting the gutter up on the top. Okay. So that was like Monday and Tuesday. We did all the same thing. And then Wednesday, we got to go up in the mountains and do an outreach. So we worked in the morning, and then we ate early, and then we waited for an hour while we waited for Victor and Maria and their horse. That's Victor. He's loading up his horse. It's not a mule. It's a horse. Everybody keeps asking me if it's a mule. It's a horse. And he says that that horse can carry twice that amount of weight, but it could barely even walk straight, so I don't know how it was carrying more. His wife, you can kind of see she has the umbrella, 9 months pregnant in flip-flops, and she walked up that mountain for an hour and a half, and then she hiked back. I was so glad she didn't decide to have that baby right there. I don't think any of us were prepared to handle that. We got to take a lot of stops because it was quite the trek. The first time that Valerie, the missionary, made it with Victor, he brought the horse just because he didn't think she could do it. He said, "You're a gringo, you can't make that hike." And he said it in Spanish. That's Maria and Victor. And Maria is very pregnant. That's her 7th child. This is the path that we were on. Okay, then we got there, and there were five families with lots of children. There were probably about 35 to 40 people. They were all eagerly anticipating our visit because Valerie had gone up and told them earlier that we were coming. This is their house, Betty's house. Betty has a history of being sexually abused, and she has five children. And she's a cauliflower grower. She grows cauliflower. She farms cauliflower? I don't know. She does something like that. And then she makes the same trek that we made, plus enough to get into town. So that's like another hour or more every day to sell her cauliflower. And then she goes back with all of her goods. That's kind of dark. Those are ducks, and they look like cows in color. Mrs. Tubbs asked me if I thought that they looked like cow in size. I'm like, yeah, they're really that big. Big ducks. They were just hanging around, and I thought they looked pretty cool. This is the house. You can really kind of see it there. See, they're growing. They're drying corn out front, and they'll eat that later, I guess. And their house is two rooms. Where the porch ends right there is where the next room starts. They were all so eager, and so like they were wearing their best. They probably didn't have much to choose from, but his name's Vicente. Isn't he adorable? I like his red boots. And we brought up with us these huge bags of rice and beans, and then these little, like one for each family, and then double that for Betty because she hosted it. And then we brought up individual bags, like custom made for each child, and they were so excited. And then we gave them Spanish Bibles too. That's Vicente again. That's one of the big bags we brought up. This is the outhouse. Somebody asked me how it worked. I don't know. I didn't ask. I just know it's an outhouse that has a Tide bottle on the side. This is Betty and her family. That baby, I have a picture of her later on. She was really ill. She had some incredible mucus coming out of her nose. It was a color different than any other color. I told all the history classes this too, so I think it's safe to tell you. This is inside of Betty's house. This is the kitchen. That's a stove. I know it doesn't look much like one. She was so proud of her house. She was like, I want to show you my house. I want to show you my house. And we're like, okay, all two rooms of it. Go for it. And she was just so excited. She's like, this is my kitchen. And we're like, great. It's a nice kitchen. It just looks cute. This is the group photo of all of us with all of them and a few children hidden behind all the adults. We did skits for them when we first got there. We did Zacchaeus because we thought that would be a good story because they're poor and he gives the money to the poor. Yeah. This is my uncle. He's up in a tree being Zacchaeus. Now he's giving centavos to all the children. That's like their coinage. They were so excited. Like, we just gave them a little tiny bit, and they were like, oh, money. Then they try to give it to their parents. Their parents would be like, no, keep it. That's great. So then we did another skit. It's kind of common. It's the doctor skit. There's a doctor, and there's all these patients. They all have illnesses, and the doctor comes up and heals them and takes on their illnesses. And then at the end, the doctor dies and is resurrected, and it's Jesus. The doctor is Jesus. It's all symbolic. It's really cool. Our doctor was this great actress lady. She was great. This is us giving away things. That one is, anyway. And we did face painting. And they were so cute. All the little girls were like, I want a butterfly. I want a flower. And, well, all the little girls in Vicente, he wanted a flower, too. And all the boys wanted mustaches. And this little boy got the mask of Zorro. This is Paul. I told you I'd tell you about him. He's in advertising and right now he's getting his master's in the artwork, so he was very artistic on their faces. There he is. Isn't he adorable? I kept telling him, you know, close your mouth. I can't get paint in your mouth. And the one little girl was next to him. She's like, he can't. I'm like, okay. Can't close his mouth. He's so cute. I told him he looked like his daddy, and he went, nuh-uh. Ashley was a beautician, so she did all kinds of cool swirly stuff all over their faces. I told him he was very handsome. This is Betty and her daughter, the baby with the illness. Betty was a very unhappy woman. We were all very proud of Ashley. This is Ashley. She was 19. So I was youngest. She was second youngest. We were all very proud of her because not only did she make the exact same trek as us, she went up there and jump roped with every little kid there. And we were like, better man than me. On the way home, we turn a corner, and there's America right there. We're like, wow, irrigation, crops. It's all very green. It looked like Grampian or something. Grampian has farms, right? Yeah. Okay. So then Thursday, we did the regular work thing, and then we got to go to a local church, so we were all very excited. This is the church. They decided that they were going to build a building, but they didn't have enough money for the roof, so really it's just the frame. This is the front of the church. The pastor was very good at the guitar. We did a hymn type thing. Just a couple of them did, and he picked it up right away. It was great. Everybody there wanted to sing for us and talk to us and tell testimonies, and they were so wonderful. They would sit in the back and they would just yell out, you know, glory to God in Spanish. And it was amazing because they were all, you know, they all sat there with their eyes closed the entire time. And this little girl came up and she sang for us, and apparently she has the best voice out of any of them because everybody was all like, wasn't she wonderful? And we're like, yes. And she sang for us, and she was so, everything was so heartfelt. There was no performance in it at all, and all of them are that way. Like I told you about going up to Betty's house, and that was, you know, it was funny because we were like, this isn't a house, what are you showing us? But at the same time, it was just a little picture. Americans are so performance oriented, and everything we do is, oh, it's about the performance. But they're not at all. They're just, they want to do it because they want to bless. They want to do it for God, and they want you to come away blessed. And in the middle, they wanted us to sing to them. So we sang for them, and Valerie told us it doesn't matter what it sounds like, they're going to think it's great. So we sang. And we sang this little song in English. It's called I Have a Friend Who Loves Me. And then we finished, and we're all ready to sit down, and Valerie's like, and now Esther's going to sing for you in Spanish. I'm like, what? But I did it, and it was kind of fun. And right before we got to sing all those songs, there was a dog fight right in the middle of the church service. These dogs came in, and they're all barking, and, you know, us Americans were almost screaming, like, oh, no, what is going on? And the Hondurans were like, shoo, shoo, like it was a fly. They just kind of, like, shoot them out the door. They're like, whoa. And then the dogs came in and laid down at their master's feet, covered them in blood, and were like, go take a bath. What are you doing in church? So there were two pastors on the trip, my uncle and Chris, the guy who organized it all. And in the middle was the pastor of that church. And all three of them spoke to us through a translator. And then they wanted to get their pictures taken together. And it was so funny, whenever Valerie didn't want to translate, they'd be like, the pastor would be like, translate, translate. She'd be like, okay, getting there. They shredded up tablecloths and hung it from the top, said it looks beautiful. It doesn't look beautiful. And this over here is kind of the altar. They sit on it too. And before we started, all the men were over there kneeling. She said the women don't do it as much, but the men, before they start, they kneel and they get themselves right with God and ready for the service. And then they, yeah. Oh, and I have a story to tell you. One of the ladies that came up and talked, brought up her daughter. Her daughter was not very happy about that. And maybe it was like a typical teenage thing. There is a light right there, all of a sudden. And she brought up her daughter, and she told a story about how her daughter tried to commit suicide. They own a rose garden, greenhouse. And her daughter drank pesticide because her life at home was too hard. Her father was very critical and yelled a lot. And so she drank pesticide because that's common in the mountains. The women like to drink pesticide because they think it's not violent. Explain to me how suicide cannot be violent. I don't know. She drank pesticide, and they found her very sick, and they drove her down to the hospital. And the way they called Valerie and Ed, the people of the ranch, and said, "Will you please meet us down here and pray over her?" Because they were Christians. You know, they believed God can bring her back, even though she has not made a statement of faith. And on the way down to the hospital, she died. But Valerie and Ed came down anyway, and they prayed over her. And the hospital, you know, checked her vitals, and they were like, "Yes, she's dead. There's no way that she could not be dead. She's just dead." And they prayed over her, and they prayed, and they prayed, and they prayed, and she came back to life after a few hours. And it was just so incredible, because the hospital was like, "She was dead. We checked her vital signs. She was dead." But she came back to life. And the girl still has not become a Christian yet, but it was such an amazing testimony to the family. And then Valerie and Ed could talk to the father about his treatment of his children, which they would have never been able to do otherwise, because, you know, that'd be completely out of place for a woman to talk to a father about his parenting. And she's doing so much better. And the girl was just beautiful. And they really think she's going to come to meet the Lord shortly. She seems like she's really opening up to it. One of the girls came down as a translator, one of the girls from the orphanage, and she prayed over the girl, and the girl shook so bad that they had to hold her up. This is after she came back to life, obviously. They had to hold her up because the presence of God was so real, and it was an amazing story. The woman is telling us, I said the girl didn't look too enthused to be up there, but you know, a lot of us could not understand what was going on. I could pick up about half of it. I knew she'd come back to life. I didn't know about the suicide, because she didn't use the word for suicide. She used some nice, polite word for suicide. So I had no idea what happened. But I knew she came back to life, and Valerie was translating for a couple of us. And at the end, on the way home, Valerie told us what happened, and we were all like, wow. We could so tell, even though we couldn't understand, we could tell that God had done something amazing. And we could tell that the entire congregation was so filled with awe over this, even though they'd heard the story over and over and over again. And when we got down there, the girl had been re-alive for like 15 days. It was incredible. Okay. Next day. This is Friday. Oh, good. This is a picture of the chapel. And this man on the left, his name is Eric. He has a wife named Kim. And 5 children. I don't know their names. I know some of them. He does the music and kind of organizes things in the ranch, like, you know, the chapel services and everything else, all the activities and stuff. He's from Phoenix. They came down a couple years ago. He has a cool story about his hand. He plays guitar, and he was in the SWAT team. SWAT team? Yeah. And he got his thumb blown off. I'm going to need to show you. He got his thumb blown off. Thumb. Okay. And they took this finger and they moved it over here so that now he has these fingers and a fake thumb. He retaught himself to play guitar so that he could go like this with this hand and strum with a hand that is not normal. He was really good too. Like, I could understand if he retaught himself guitar and he wasn't good. He retaught himself and he was awesome. So, while we were there, we got to do the chapel service. I was somehow put in charge of organizing the outreach in this. And I brought up this kind of, you know, like, this object lesson about God's greatest gift, and you're supposed to wrap a present and be like, this present symbolizes salvation, which is God's greatest gift. And I gave it to Lois because I'm like, she was a kindergarten teacher, she's going to be good at this. And she comes up to me, she's like, "I need your help." I'm like, "Okay, I already wrapped the present, what do you want?" She's like, "I'm going to wrap these little blocks of wood using the exact same wrapping paper and the same bows as yours and give one to each of the children. to remind them of us and of God's greatest gift. I said, that is awesome. And she did such a good job. The children were outgoing, and they talked to her and talked back to her and stuff. And Valerie said that never happens. Like, usually they just sit there like bumps. And then we had Paul give his testimony. He didn't really give his testimony, but he did give this really good talk to them about persevering and trusting God. And it meant a lot because he was more their age. He was 25, so he was only like 10 years older than most of them. Marlene and Becky sang for the church that we went to the night before, and they sang for the chapel service. They did very good. The children just loved it. They said that they sounded like angels. And then we got to play with the kids that night. This is, okay, remember the man with the weird hand, Eric? This is his son, one of his sons. He wanted to play with you all the time. He was so full of energy. And you walk in, and he'd be like, you want to play pigsty? And we'd be like, can we breathe? But he cheated at everything. He was horrible. Like, you play something with him, and he would be like going through his cards, just looking at him. We're like, don't, you're not allowed to look. Okay, this little boy did a card trick, and nobody could figure out how he did it. It was just amazing. This is one of the youngest on the ranch. I think his name is Christian. And Jeff's little boy sent Thomas the Tank trains down to the for the children to play with. He gave them to him. And this little boy just loved those trains. And he also loved getting his picture taken. And this is Jinjin. She didn't like getting her picture taken, but she really enjoyed taking pictures. And she also enjoyed messing with the settings on my camera. But we got all that straightened out. It was great. She killed my battery. She was so cute. We played ping pong with them. They're very good. My goodness. This is Kenzie and Junior. They're best friends. They told me so. And they played with us. They played, now I'm not going to remember what they played, but it was really cool. This is Nate again. Then, because we spent so much time working, we did actually get to do some relaxing too. This, we had bonfire one of the nights, Friday night, I think. And we kind of got to debrief, because, you know, you do all that and then you have to talk to somebody about it. So we talked during that, and the night before, Wednesday night, we had this like little candlelight thing on their porch. There's a lot of candle and a lot of really creepy music. It was kind of scary. But we went home early. This is Bill and Lois. This is all of us. Lillian is on the left, and then me, and then Becky, and then Lois, and then Marlene, and then Ashley. And these are the boys. My Uncle John is on the far left, and then Bill, and then Chris, and then Ed, he's the one who lives there with his family, and then Jeff, and then Paul, and then that's Ed's little boy up there with the flag of Honduras. He avoided my camera all week, but I finally got him. This is us as a group. That's all of it. Do I get to do that question and answer thing?
Let's just let people greet you at the door. Would that be good?
That's great. Did I go over?
No, hon, you didn't go late. It was perfect.
Okay.
All right.